Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just be.
Our guest this week grew up in Krakow, Missouri, and enlisted in the U.S. Marine Corps in 1975 at age 18. From November 4th, 1979, to January 20th, 1981, 444 days, he was held hostage in Iran, along with 52 other Americans. Since 2016, he's been with Folds of Honor, whose mission is to provide scholarships to spouses and children of fallen and disabled service members. His name? Rocky Sickman. And we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula, this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to an American hero, Rocky Sickman, who served in the U.S. Marine Corps from 1975 to 1981. Rocky, welcome, an honor to have you.
Yeah, thank you, Jack. It's an honor to be on the show, sir.
Can we start by talking about your childhood, your mom and your dad, please?
Yes. You know, I grew up in a small town of Krakow, Missouri, population 50, which is what I used to tell everybody, and that was dogs and cats included. But, Jack, you know, my parents taught me three things: love of family, love of faith, and love of country. And those three things took me through my life. I had five brothers. There were five of us in the family, including my parents, a total of seven, lived in a 900-square-foot home. My father was a concrete mixer driver. My mother was a carpet store secretary. But you know what? They made life, especially around the holidays, like we were at the Ritz-Carlton. I mean, family would come over. Everybody would spend time together. And my mother was a very staunch Catholic. And I served growing up. And my parents always told me, Rocky, you make sure you continue to pray because someday you're going to need God. And so sure enough, that it was that I wanted to be like my father. He served in the Army. My other brother, he served in the Army also. And I broke the code and I went into the Marine Corps. But I wanted to serve the country just as my father, my brother had. And, you know, we were involved with the American Legion in the small town of Washington, Missouri. And we were always in parades and I was always holding the flag. And so that flag, it from a small child, it represented freedom and the wonderful things that I took for granted. I had no idea. But yeah, I had a wonderful growing up time period.
What does the Marine uniform say to you, Rocky Sickman?
Oh my gosh, Jack. I tell you what, it was one of the things that caught my attention when I was reading the New York Times magazine when I was a small kid. And it was a Marine standing in front of an American embassy, and I said, you know what, I want to do that. And so that I did. I signed up for MSG, but I told the recruiters, 1975, it's right after the Vietnam War, Jack, so... You know, I was sitting there watching my brother returning back from Vietnam and many others that were spitting on these individuals. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, that's not right. And so I joined the Marine Corps and, you know, I saw the world and I got to be MSG. But that uniform, it caught a lot of attention with the ladies. That's for sure, Jack.
All right. Army, Navy, there's pride. But the pride... lifelong camaraderie of the U.S. Marines is unmatched. Rocky, how do you explain that?
You know, it has been around 250 years this year as the Army and the Navy. But, you know, the birthday is November 10th every year. And I think the Marines are probably one of the main units of the military that remember the birthday, and they celebrate it together. But, I mean, many of wars have been fought, and, you know, we were taught when I went to boot camp, especially that was during the after coming back from Vietnam, of all the situations that the Marines had gone through, and of course, Bella Woods and Chesty Puller and all these other great Marines. And we just heard the history. So history was really, it was put into molding of the United States Marine. And I was very honored and proud to be able to graduate and wear that uniform. And you know what, to this day, once a Marine, always a Marine, and I'm always involved with military. And, you know, and I salute all of our military. There's 1 million men and women that support, you know, have been affected by war. And there's 2 million dependents. And it is the cost of tuition to help provide those individuals, it's around $9 billion. So I continue to support not only the Marine Corps, but all branches.
All right. You enlisted in 1975, and you had a dream. All right, and the dream came true in October of 1979. You were assigned to the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, Iran. Talk about, give us a picture of the lay of the land of Tehran back in October of 79.
You know, it was, from what I read when I was told that I was going to be going there, it was a beautiful country. And, you know, if you go back in time and you watch a lot of the media, Iran was one of the most beautiful countries in the world, in addition to Lebanon. And so when I got there, I'm sitting there thinking, this is going to be an incredible post, being able to be a Marine security guard at an American embassy, very, prestigious position. And we get there the first night, Jack, and myself and a group of other Marines, we're surrounded in the airport with we're in civilian clothes, but we're carrying green duffel bags that, you know, have all of our clothes in it. Well, we are surrounded in the Tehran airport, and we're made to unload all of our stuff out of our bags. So finally, the group of Americans that were outside waiting for us to come through, they realized that we weren't coming out, and they came running in, and they saw us be searched. They were able to get the Revolutionary Guard to release us. And so that was my first evening. But the next morning when I woke up, you know, Tehran was a beautiful country, you know, snow-capped mountains in the north, and you could hear the Quran being played. And I'm just sitting there thinking, that was part of my interest, was to see the world. I had been to Asia, been to Europe, and the Middle East I had not been. And so I was very excited to learn more about this country.
We're talking Rocky Sickman. When we come back, we'll ask him about November 4th, 1979. And I'm Jack Russell, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Crisula. We're with Rocky Sickman. Rocky, let's go back. November 4th, 1979. Walk us through that day, please.
Yes. 2 weeks earlier, Jack, we had heard that the Shah of Iran had been allowed to enter the United States for health treatment. And at that point in time, President Carter was the president, and he had approached his staff and said, if we allow the Shah into the United States, what are you going to say when the Islamic Republic of Iran takes their people hostage? Well, that morning, November 4th, back, I can tell you two things occurred I will never forget, and I will tell every American. I'm walking to the motor pool gate. I'm 22 years of age at this point in time, and I'm walking to the motor pool gate, which is about 30 feet away from the front gate. And there's demonstrations, prior, because of the Shah being entering into the United States. And the demonstration was right in front of the American embassy. And all of a sudden, as I'm walking into the motor pool to get a vehicle, I hear my walkie-talkie had recall. So I turned to look at the front gate, and they're coming over the gate. And Jack, if you've ever, you and your listeners, ever been to an American embassy, they're very well secured. I can tell you that morning on November 4th, 1979, there was not one security at that front gate. It was like the Islamic Republic of Iran told the security to leave and we're going to take control. And that they did. They came over the wall. I could run pretty fast, got back to the chancery. The chancery was where We had kept our weapons and everything. Billy Gallegos was closing the 4-inch steel door. He kept it open long enough for me to squeeze in. We get our weapons. We secure 7 Marines, secure that American embassy, Jack, for 7 hours. 7 hours. Waiting for the host government, the Islamic Republic of Iran, to come. All of a sudden, as I'm manning the front door that I just came in, they're pounding on the front door. Billy Gallegos is downstairs. He hears that they've gotten in. He runs, and I run down to help support him. And as the second thing I will never forget, and I will tell every American until I go into my grave, that morning as we donned our gas masks, it's going from clear to fog. Clear the fog, holding the sawed-off shotgun, finger on the trigger. Around the corridor come 4 Iranian women being pushed by Iranian men. And the men are pushing these women forward, knowing that we would not shoot unarmed innocent women. We're being screamed, don't fire, don't retaliate, help us on the way. We get to the step, tear gas is popped, they remove themselves. We go up to the very top of the American embassy, we barricade ourselves in, Jack. And at that point in time, it's now about 4 hours into it, President Carter is talking to the other staff, State Department staff, and they tell us to give ourselves up, that they would work this out through diplomacy, and that was November 4th, 1979.
Tell us about the first week.
Oh, the first week. I can tell you the first night, as we opened that door, they took the Marines, and right away we wanted to make sure that they, you know, if they did anything, they had a chance to close the door real quick. But they took the Marines, myself included, and put our arms in the back, tied our arms, blindfolded us. And so for the next 30-plus days, that first week, of course, we were the first day we were put into a chair in the ambassador's house, and our arms were tied to the arms of the chair and our feet were tied to the feet of the chair, which really ended up being like that for the next 30-some-plus days. And so it was you have 1 security guard per hostage. And so it was pretty chaotic. People were running around crazy. You could hear gunshots in the distance. Obviously, there must have been some individuals pulling the trigger on weapons that didn't know what they were doing. And you're just sitting there thinking, Jack, that you know this is going to be over very quickly because this is against international negotiations of taking an American embassy hostage. And so you're sitting there thinking this is going to be ending. That first night, they put us on the floor, and they tie our wrists to our ankles, and there we lay that first night. And you really didn't sleep much, but when you get tired, you close your eyes, you wake up the next morning, and they put you back in that chair. And it wasn't until your interrogations, they wanted to know what you did, who you were. So it was nothing more than name, rank, and social security number. But there was an individual that did break and basically went around and told the Islamic Republic of Iran, these individuals, who everybody was, and put these people in solitary confinement. But, you know, the first week, and I mean, not only the first week, but 444 days, Jack, you didn't know if you were going to live or die morning, noon, or night.
2 months after it happened, Walter Cronkite, you know, the father of the country, every night on CBS Evening News would say how many days the hostages have been captive. And it kind of rallied us in America. Were you aware of that support?
No. Jack, I can tell you, as I sat tied for that first 30-plus days, I remember back in 1975 when the Vietnam veterans came home, Jack, and they were spit on. People were yelling at them. And I'm sitting there thinking, there's 66 Americans 10,000 miles away from home. If nobody cared about those thousands of military individuals that served our country back in 1975, who's going to remember us 10,000 miles away from home? And there were only about 66 of us. So it was so sad, Jack. You would wake up in the morning, they put you in a corner, and through the broken windows, you could hear the traffic start in the capital of Tehran. You could hear the horns honking, and it got louder and louder, and all of a sudden it would peak, and then all of a sudden that day would go away, and the next day, and then you'd hear people chanting, "Death to America." The world was going on without you. and it was so lonely, and you thought people were going to forget about you, other than your family.
Speaking of forgetting about people, when we come back, we're going to ask about eight lives, eight heroes who gave up their life for you. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Rocky Sickman, 444 days held hostage, along with 52 other Americans. Okay, April 24th, 1980. Eight U.S. servicemen died during the failed rescue attempt known as Operation Eagle Claw. What was it? And tell us about those eight heroes that we lost.
Yeah, you know, Jack, it is one of those things that each day that you sat there, day 5, day 10, day 20, 30, 40, 50, you just thought that, you know, we were going to be forgotten, that the United States was not going to do anything to jeopardize a war with the neighboring country of Russia and everything else. But I was wrong. I had no idea that a group of American heroes, and those really, you said, I was a hero, I'm not a hero. Those individuals were heroes. And the night of April 24th of 1980, they all basically started their mission. Eight CH-53s took off from the Nimitz, two C-130s took off from Cairo, Egypt, and they all merged and landed. Six helicopters landed in the desert miles away from Tehran, along with two C-130s. So they actually penetrated the Islamic Republic of Iran airspace and landed. They sent eight helicopters because they needed six helicopters to do the mission. So President Carter said, I'm going to send extra just in case. Well, as it started off, the helicopters off the Nimitz, they got into a sandstorm. Two of them had to abort. So the final helicopter that landed on Desert One had hydraulic issues. And so I think it was Charlie Beckwith. He called President Carter on the ground there in Iran and said, we got five helicopters. We feel like we can still do it. And, you know, President Carter said, you told me that we needed six. He goes, yes, sir, but we feel like we can do it. At that point in time, it's the morning of April 25th. They started the evening of April 24th. It's the morning of April 25th, around 2 a.m., I believe. I have to look back. And again, I knew none of this, Jack, until I came home and was told this. But anyway, that morning, President Carter had boarded the rescue operation. One helicopter was refueling. It gets up and he loses track of where the C-130 is, becomes vertical, doesn't know if he's up, down, clips the wing, and it ignites, and eight individuals are killed in this fire. We as hostages, I can tell you, the next day, that day of April 25th, it was a normal day. We were basically locked in the rooms, offices of the Chancellery of the American Embassy. So you did not leave that room, Jack. If you wanted to go to the restroom, you basically had to knock on the door, and then the guard would take you to the restroom. And so that day, morning of April 25th, it was a normal day. Until noon, you start hearing people run up and down the corridor. In the back of the American Embassy, you could hear vehicles racing back and forth. And it wasn't until that evening of April 25th they came in. And trust me, every time that door opened, you jumped because you didn't know if they were going to come in and start shooting. Well, that night, they came running into our room, blindfolded us, handcuffed us together, took us downstairs into an embassy vehicle, and then handcuffed Jerry to the left of me, and he was handcuffed to the vehicle. Billy was handcuffed to my right hand, and he was handcuffed to the vehicle. Blindfolded, handcuffed, they then take a picture of us, and the vehicle drives off. And little did we realize that we had moved from Tehran to Isfahan, and we didn't know where we were until after you'd been there. Once you left that location, you said you've been to Isfahan, now you're going to another location. So it wasn't until months later we got to our, it was just days later that we got to our second location. And not only were we held hostage, Jack, there was a war with Iran and Iraq that had started. And our second location, the Iraqis were bombing nearby. And so they then put us back into the vehicle and they drove us back to Tehran. They said, you've been to Shiraz. So if you know Iran on a map, you can see Tehran at the very top north. And if you look down south, southwest, you'll see Shiraz along the Persian Gulf. And so they then drove us. And we were blindfolded, handcuffed, and locked to the vehicle the whole time. And so it wasn't until we got home, Jack, did we find out, obviously, that there had been a rescue operation and really what had happened.
All right. Did you ever meet President Jimmy Carter?
You know, I did. And we met President Carter. It was probably the day that we... I think we arrived late the evening of January 20th, 1981. The next day, President Carter, obviously right after, and again, you have to understand, and your listeners have to understand, the Islamic Republic of Iran told us, it is not you, the American people, we hate. It's your government. But we will use you to humiliate your government. And your government comes and goes every 4 to 8 years. And so little did we realize that here in the United States, negotiated a deal for $8.3 billion. That's a billion dollars. And it was in gold. And so it was, they needed the funds to fight the war against Iraq. And so the United States made a deal that they released the funds, and the funds arrived on January 17th of 1981. And so we were released January 20th. Jack, and it was one of those things that we were put onto an airplane, and we were taken from our room blindfolded, and we were taken to the airport blindfolded. It wasn't until we got to the airport and we heard the sound of a jet engine, they told us to unblindfold. And as you start to unblindfold, you're seeing people that you hadn't seen since November 4th of 1979 that you had breakfast with, and now it's January 20th of 1981. You look bad, you smell bad, and you're in shock. You're like wondering what's going on. And so we board an airplane, and they start to close the door, and you're looking around and saying, wait, where's Gene? Where's Kurt? Where's Judy? Where's Debbie? Where's everybody else? And they said, no, you're the last people. The others were let go a year earlier. So we had no idea that other people had been let go during this whole negotiation. And so the pilot gets on and says, please, we must be leaving very quickly. They had waited for 3 days. Algerians that were our mediator, they were the pilots in their plane. And so the pilot gets to the end of the runway. It's January 20th, 1981. And all of a sudden, the pilot's getting ready to take off. And he's got the foot on the brake, and he starts accelerating. The plane's shaking, and all of a sudden, it comes back down to an idle. And Jack, through all the mock firing squads, the Russian roulette, you're sitting there thinking they're screwing with us one last time. All of a sudden, the pilot comes on and says, they've turned the runway lights off. And it was planned like this, Jack. They turned the runway lights off because back home was the inauguration. They waited until President Carter was out of the office and President Reagan was in just to stab him in the back, because he worked diligently to try to get us released. And so, obviously, many people said, well, they were scared of Reagan. Well, again, 46 years. I'm here to tell you, Jack, that a Muslim is not born with hatred. They are taught hatred. And for 46 years, the Islamic Republic of Iran has been in war. The war started on November 4th. And they just wanted to humiliate Carter. And what did they do to President Reagan in 1983? But killed the Americans at the American Embassy and then killed 240 Marines. But we get onto the airplane. We get to Germany through our trip. And the next day, we're in hospital pajamas and a T-shirt. And President Carter comes in. And he wants to meet with all the hostages. And it was an honor. And obviously, many of the hostages were very upset with President Carter. And, you know, I'm a true believer that he does things based on the information that is given to him. And I think he even admitted, he goes, you know what, I will have to live with what happened. the rest of my life with 8 individuals that perished, in addition to you being taken hostage. But a very good man.
We're talking to Rocky Sickman. When we come back, we're going to ask him about his 34-year career with a company called Anheuser-Busch. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR.
You've been listening to your inspirational fireside chat, Anything Is Possible, for nearly 20 years.
This is Anything Is Possible, and I'm Jack Crisula.
But what has Jack been up to lately? Search at AIP Speaker Series and find out. Jack has interviewed thousands of historical voices, some of whom have offered him their philosophy of life, like Tom Izzo.
And Tom writes, "Work hard, persistence always wins out, discipline is the highest form of love. Stay humble."
The great Ernie Harwell.
"My aim is to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God."
And the voices of our generation.
"I am reassured continuously that His unfathomable love and mercy are the greatest gifts of my life and my constant source of strength, reassurance, and guidance. His Holiness, Pope Francis."
At AIP Speakers Series is the YouTube channel where all of these jewels can be heard, including some of Anything Is Possible's greatest guests.
And we're with Mitch Albom.
The Little Liar is really a book about truth and lies and the price we pay when we lie.
This is Anything Is Possible, and with Tom Watson.
My father loved to play with the pros at the club, developed a very quick friendship with Stan and played some golf with him. And then he would ask me to play golf with him and Stan.
Our guest this week was born with a rare disorder characterized by the absence of arms and legs. His name, Nick Vujicic.
Something that every human being actually deals with, Jack. It's the choice of continuing to believe or giving up.
And recordings of the AIP Speaker Series events at St. John's Resort. Go to YouTube and search at AIP Speaker Series. It's free. And remember,
anything.
Spohom. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Rocky Sickman, an American hero. 1982, you join a fledgling company by the name of Budweiser Anheuser-Busch. 34-year career. Talk about that chapter.
Yes. Well, you know, obviously, when I returned home, my girlfriend had waited for me for 444 days. So she gave me an ultimatum, either her or the military. I chose her. We got married. We've been married 44 wonderful years. But, you know,
and her name was Jill Ditch.
It is.
She waited 444 days for you.
Yes. And that is one of those things, Jack, that every morning I wake up, I think of how wonderful my life is. Wonderful son, daughter, 5 grandkids. Those 8 individuals that died would never have that. But when I returned home, I had to get a job, and so I worked at Camel X. And then 1982, I was fortunate to get on with Anheuser-Busch. I became the director of military sales. 2007, I meet this individual that came to Anheuser-Busch and made a cold call. And he wanted to see somebody about a military program. So the security called me. I go downstairs. I see this little skinny guy in a fight uniform. He says, "Mr. Sickman, I'd like to talk to you." So he tells me his story. I tell him my story. And since then, obviously, Anheuser-Busch, 15 years, $33 million. But, for fold of honor, I retired in 2016. Lieutenant Colonel Rooney says, "Rocky, you got to come work for me." And so that I did. And it's one of those things, Jack, it's a therapeutic piece for me. But Folds of Honor, organization that provides scholarship to children and spouses of fallen, disabled military and first responders. And, I mentioned about the military and, first responders. They respond to over 240 million 911 calls a year. There's 800,000 police officers, about 1 million firefighters, and about 200,000 EMT. And those individuals, in addition, are military. It's one of those things I relate back to those 8 individuals that gave their life for my life. So every morning I wake up, I make sure I remind the American people that freedom is not free. And your listeners can go out to foldsofhonor.org and make a donation. But it's a truly wonderful, incredible organization.
Let's go back to June of 2006. This Lieutenant Colonel Dan Rooney was returning home from his second tour of duty. He was on a United flight from Chicago to the Gerald Ford Airport in Grand Rapids. What happened as that plane landed?
Yes, the pilot had asked everybody on board to please stay on board because they were bringing the remains of a fallen soldier. And Lieutenant Colonel Rooney is an F-16 fighter pilot, just returning home, and he's looking out as the pilot's talking. He sees his draped casket. And, you know, like the folded flag is a constant reminder of those who have paid the ultimate sacrifice. And the pilot's asking everybody to please remain on board until the ceremony is over. So 20 minutes later, the pilot says, thank you for remaining. And Lieutenant Colonel Rooney gets up and looks around and realizes that over three quarters of the people left, nowhere to go, Jack, than their warm blanket that this individual had given up. And he had a son that was on the tarmac that would never see his father again, and a wife that would never have her husband again. And so that's when he and his wife then formed Folds of Honor over their garage in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. And now here we are, 62,000 scholarships, $200 million. And it's 45% of our recipients are minority, 47% are female. And so 91 cents out of every dollar that comes in goes into that scholarship. So very lean and mean, but he has created this mission after seeing that situation that late evening.
You joined Dan's team in 2016, and this has become a ministry for you, Rocky, a ministry for you. Share with us three stories, if you will.
Three stories. Well, I can tell you the one story was when I first met Lieutenant Colonel Rooney, him coming home. You know, the other story is, you know, obviously when I go to Arlington and I see the right behind the tomb of the unknown soldier, I see the tomb of these eight individuals. And to meet the other, I mean, my story is just one of the 62,000. To hear the stories of these other 62,000 Folds of Honor recipients that fallen, disabled, you know, military and first responders, it breaks your heart. And for the American people, we must, like I said, never forget, Jack, that freedom is not free. And there's so many different stories that have just continuously broken my heart and my wife. She knows that it's every time I tell the story, it's really it takes a lot out of you, Jack. You know, you're going back and talking about things that you really don't want to open up those can of worms. But it's a story that the American people must hear about the sacrifices of those eight, but also those others that were on the rescue operation. And interesting enough, every year I get together with the remaining guys that survived that rescue attempt. And, you know, we get together and we tell stories, and I get to say thank you for having the guts to try. So there's so many stories, Jack.
If you want to learn more, www.foldsofhonor.org. Rocky, what have these young heroes and their families taught you?
Yeah, honor their sacrifice, educate their legacy. I mean, it's one of those things that every morning I wake up, Jack, I earn it. I earn it in memory of those that died for me that April 25th, 1980, that early morning, and in addition to all of our first responders and all of our military. So it is something that we as Americans, we should understand that we live in an incredibly beautiful, wonderful country, and we should never forget that freedom is not free. And at Folds of Honor, we say, honor their sacrifice, educate their legacy.
Talk to us about the courage of our widows and their children of our fallen heroes, please.
Yeah, I mean, if you can just have your listeners just think about this. All of a sudden, you get a knock on the door, and you open a door, and there's a military or first responder there to tell the story about their loved one, you know, being killed. And they have three children. I mean, what do you say to this person other than, hey, we're going to help you. We're going to, you know, help you. We're never going to be able to bring that loved one back. But what we're going to be able to do is, like I said, honor their sacrifice, educate their legacy through providing scholarships and education so that their children can continue to tell their story. And at Folds of Honor, that's one of the things that we have children that are continuously telling the story of their parent that had passed away or disabled. And it's a very powerful message at Folds of Honor.
Rocky, let's go back to June 21st, 2025. 2:40 in the morning, 7 B-2 bombers dropped 14 bunker busters in Operation Midnight Hammer. What are your thoughts?
You know what? It's been 46 years, Jack, that the Islamic Republic of Iran, this November 4th, and, you know, they had never been held accountable. And now, of course, here Iran was starting to create and form this nuclear program, and we retaliated. And I was so happy because I thought that we had forgotten about what they had done 46 years ago and how they have continued to teach hate. You know, it would have been interesting and different had when we were let go, that they would have planted roses and trees and everything else, but they didn't. They took the money that was given to them and created proxies to hate. Like I said, a Muslim is not born with hatred. They're taught hatred. And every November 4th, every January 20th, they burn the American flag. And so, you know what? To see them now be held accountable, I was very, very excited and very happy.
Rocky Sickman, thank you for 50 years of service to our country and now to the widows and the families of fallen heroes. Please keep up the great, great work.
Thank you, sir.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohom.